Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Hey folks, welcome to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon with you here. Hey, thanks to our local small business partners, including Gateway Marketing Cafe, David Drake Family Psychiatry, and real estate agent Joe Henry. Before we get rolling here, folks, thanks to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music. Later in the program, we'll be talking about Stephen Miller. Concerns about him, but other people who are kind of the men behind the curtain that some of us have concerns about. Also, we'll be talking about various aspects of climate change, including efforts to protect big oil, because they need it, right? The link between war and energy, and concerns over the development of data centers here in Iowa and around the country. We'll also be talking about robot farm dogs. Whoa. Anyway, but first, it's my pleasure to welcome to the program Brad Zahn. Brad and I know each other for a long time. He was a small business owner. I had a hardware store in Urbandale back when I first met you. Yep. And he was a state senator. He's also now the regional administrator for the Great Plains region of the Small Business Administration. And he's acting director for the SBA for the Great Lakes region. And like me, you were dumb enough to run for Congress.
Yes, I did. It was a blessing I didn't get elected.
And Brad's a Republican, but that doesn't mean he's necessarily a bad guy, okay?
You and I have gotten along, done a lot of great things together. I always remember meeting you when I had my hardware store.
Yeah.
And at that time, you had an organization to promote small family-owned businesses.
Yeah.
And
yeah, well, that was one of our 1,000 Friends of Iowa.
Yes. Yep.
Responsible land use, you know, building in the urban core.
Yeah. That's what we tried to
protecting
do
farmland.
When I was mayor.
Yeah.
You know, we tried to grow things for the older areas that were struggling and build with within.
And now you're doing kind of comparable work through the SBA, promoting small businesses with a set of grants and loans, I believe?
Yes, it is. And, you know, it's kind of funny how the circle of life works. I was 23, had a dream to own a hardware store. The store was going out of business. No bank would even really talk to me. So I went through the Drake Small Business Development Center to help me, assist me, which now is our Small Business Development Centers. That helped me with all the paperwork to qualify for an SBA guaranteed loan. And honestly, if it wasn't for the SBA, I wouldn't have had that hardware store.
Okay. So now you're kind of payback. You're helping other people who also might be in your same situation. But what are we looking at specifically? I mean, you said that there's obviously any kind of business could fall under the SBA's purview, but a lot of stuff that you're doing works is relevant to rural communities and even agricultural work, correct?
That is correct. President Trump has made an initiative to get into the rural parts of the United States, which are struggling. Doesn't matter what state I am in, there's struggles everywhere in rural parts of America. So what they've done is there's a new program, which I'm very thankful because I reached out to you to talk about. And it's a food production loan that we have. Typically, the loans that we do at the Small Business Administration, we guarantee, or should I say the taxpayers guarantee, 60%. We've gotten really aggressive with this loan because, and I'll talk about the challenges in the food production industry, at 90%. So bankers are more likely to be, you know, would be interested in these kind of loans just because we've got such a high guarantee. But what we see going on, well, certainly in the Midwest and pretty much everywhere, obviously grocery prices are higher right now. I give an example. There is a big meat production plant in Nebraska that is shutting down. It's owned by Tyson. and what they're shutting down. It's a population of 10,000 people, and 4,200 people are going to lose their jobs.
We've talked about this on this program before.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to say this because I tell it the way it is. The big four meat producers out there, I personally don't think they play fair.
We agree. And probably, Tyson is certainly one of them. Smithland.
Yeah,
they're owned by China.
Well,
Smithfield.
Yep. And I certainly recognize that. So what we're doing is we've just completed, I still have the state of Kansas to do, what we call a meat production roundtable. So we're getting the smaller meat packers, so to speak, and this includes poultry as well, around a table to see what the challenges are. And we're trying to ask them to consider expanding so there's more competition in the market. With the SBA, we have a limit of 500 employees. So that's what we define a small business, 500 or less.
As a sole proprietor, that's hilarious. But anyway, my hardware store, we have
three employees.
Yeah, yeah, right. 500 is still small.
But,
crazy.
Yeah. 98% of businesses out there are small businesses. They're the people that are that really take the risk to own businesses. So what we're doing with this program is this. One big component of this is we've got all these deserts throughout the United States in regards to groceries.
And food deserts.
Correct. And what we're trying to do is this loan that we're talking about includes grocery stores or anyone that is in the line of food production with the exception of restaurants. So it could be anyone that produces any kind of food that's consumed, that they would qualify for this loan. And I've got all, like I said to you earlier,
It help farmers as well as those adding value to agricultural products?
Well, we think that this, if we get more competition out there, that the producers, which are the farmers or the livestock producers, that hopefully they'll be able to capture more of what it costs to produce that calf, that's as it's mm-hmm. born until it's produced, or the chicken or whatever that is, or turkey. So it is our intention to get more competition out there to lower food costs and give the producers a better margin.
Now, you said earlier that rural communities are struggling. What's behind that?
Well, I think, you've got the population centers, and I can only speak as a former state senator in the challenges that we saw in the rural parts of Iowa, is you've got everyone, it seems like, are moving to the more populated areas. What are the challenges? I think young people want to be closer to a metropolitan. We've got a challenge in agriculture because so many family farms are owned by older people that don't have younger people that are interested in taking that over. Not to mention how much it costs, for the equipment and for the ground. And it's hard for a young farmer to start up, in agriculture. I know there's some incentive programs that are out there that the state offered. I'm sure there's probably some national ones. I know the USDA has got grants, where at the SBA, we don't have grants. We have just loans is what we do. And I work with the USDA on a probably weekly basis. In fact, that's who, when we did the meat packing or meat production tours that we did with the USDA. Internet. I mean, it's the kind of the things we've always talked about down at the Capitol.
You mean broadband availability,
right,
in rural communities?
You know, to make sure that they have the services that they need, and I think that that is being improved. But there's several reasons why I think rural parts of the struggling.
In some parts of the country, we see more and more farm ownership by foreign companies, or foreign individuals. More and more farm ownership by very, very wealthy Americans, billionaires, not just Democrat. It's pretty bipartisan. Bill Gates is an example. He owns what? A quarter of a million acres of American farmland.
Yeah, and I really have a problem with foreign ownership. But
to me, that's even more problematic.
Right.
With billionaires buying up farmland being a close second. But isn't that part of the problem? I mean, they're driving up the cost of farmland. Like you mentioned that young people have a hard time getting into the industry because of the cost of land, but also the cost of insurance, the cost of equipment.
Right, I agree with all
and,
that.
And now the Iran war is driving up the cost of fertilizer, the cost of oil.
Well, you
agree with that?
There's no doubt. I am hopeful that obviously this is a tough time right now. I'm hopeful that the President Trump is going to hopefully end that conflict that's going on in Iran. There's no doubt that it did have an impact on our oil and fertilizer prices.
But did he need to start the war?
I'm not here to talk about that. I'm a small business guy.
But it does impact.
To answer your question, yeah. I think if there's a nuclear threat, I think that that's what he wanted to solve. And I'm not involved in the day-to-day, but I mean, I support the president, obviously.
For me, the nuclear threat was addressed by the treaty, signed by, back when Obama was president, canceled by Trump. But that is another conversation.
Yeah, I get that.
But it seems to me like there are a lot of challenges facing rural communities. And certainly, I guess for some, it's the allure of being in the big city where there's so many exciting things happening culturally. But I mean, there's also a real strong allure for being in a small town or being in a rural place where, last night, I can't tell you how many times I was woken up by motorcycles revving their engines. And that was followed by sirens, fire engines. Mm-hmm. And that was followed by a helicopter going overhead to Methodist Hospital.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, wouldn't it be nice to live out in the country?
Well, listen.
it seems like there's poles both ways.
I love being in the country. I was raised in the country. I just moved from Urbandale out to now what's called West Des Moines because they've annexed that. Got 10 acres. It's quiet out there. There's no doubt about that. But, when I was mayor of Urbandale, all of us mayors got together, and our mission was is to try to come up with attractions that would bring younger people to the Des Moines area. Mm-hmm. I mean, and unfortunately, what happens is I'm sure...
So you're part of the problem.
Well, I would say, I think we've got some great things going on in the Des Moines metropolitan area.
Sure,
but
we do, yes.
But I certainly understand the unintended consequence on what we tried to accomplish.
So you got a lot of young producers, I think, young people who want to go into production agriculture, but in terms of producing for the local market, I mean, there's been tremendous growth among, direct market production.
I would agree with that.
And a lot of it is organic-based. Uh-huh. It's not just vegetables, it's meats as well, it's dairy, it's, I knew one farmer raising crickets.
Oh, wow.
Not that interested personally, but still, A plus for innovation. Right now we have an agricultural system set up to really benefit traditional, conventional agriculture, corn production, bean production, large-scale livestock production. Is there any way that the SBA could cooperate with the USDA on a farm bill that might begin to incentivize more of that kind of direct marketing operations?
We do have programs in some instances that we would be able to help out with, obviously the capital that's needed that. But the USDA is really the person that is in charge. Obviously, they're part of the agriculture segment of our government. And I know they've got some very aggressive programs for young farmers, startup farmers. I can't speak about that. I would suggest that you talk to someone from USDA.
Well, we did. We talked about one program recently on this program that was canceled by the USDA, and it was targeted for small operations, and there were several. There were at least two here in Iowa, I believe, that were affected by it.
Okay,
nationwide.
I'm not familiar with that.
Okay, we'll get on that, will you?
Yeah, I'll talk to my colleague at the USDA about that because I'm not.
Brooke Rollins?
No. Mike Sexton.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, another former.
In charge of rural affairs.
So now we know where former Republican Iowa senators go.
Well, I don't know about, obviously.
We could talk about
how I got this position, but, obviously I was a big supporter of President Trump, and I know him very well, and I lost my election, and then I got a call from the transition team.
Yeah.
Offered me a couple different positions, and this is the one that was the best fit for me. Plus, I get to live in Iowa.
Good. Now, so is the SBA doing, how is it different under the Trump administration than it was under Biden or Trump 1 or Obama? What's changed?
I could just tell you we're running it like a business, which I'm excited about because it should be run like a business.
But not all government should be run like a business.
I think all government should be run like a business from an efficiency standpoint.
Well, let's have that's another conversation we should have. But if we start getting into that one, this will be a long conversation.
We tried to do that as best we could down at the Iowa Capitol, And so I just, you know, what kind of changes? First of all, I would say that, you know, I had to make a lot of personnel changes. There was a lot of people that got offered, a severance, so to speak. Most 99% of them took that because maybe they didn't agree with President Trump.
How much of the workforce changed under Trump's?
I can only speak for the region that I've been, been representing for the last year and a half. I've got a new district director in St. Louis, Kansas City, and Des Moines.
And what about the kind of the lower level staff that are doing the day to day work that kind of know
the
programs?
Pretty much in the region that I represent, they're pretty much all there.
Okay.
That's good. Des Moines, we really didn't lose anybody other than the district director. Okay. So we've got a lot of great people, and I just gave a speech not too long ago. I feel terrible for people that serve our public through a governmental agency because everybody that I've been exposed to in the state of Iowa and all the other three states, they are very passionate on helping small businesses that want to start up or expand. And so I just, you know, kudos to everyone out there. And I think they get a bad rap in regards to the way they're treated, I say that both federally and the state of
Iowa. But overall, there has not been a lot of changes in SBA operations.
Our programs have changed a little bit. I think that what they've done has been updated to reflect more what the times we're going through right now. But for the most part, we got the 7A loans, the 504 loans. They're basically the same.
Okay. And you're certainly aware of polls, and polls are not very favorable for President Trump right now. Is that going to impact your ability to reach people who might benefit from some of the loans?
No. I say no because we're in the SBA. We don't care what the color of your skin is, religion, sexual orientation. We have requirement.
So you're a DEI organization.
One requirement. You have to have a decent credit score.
Okay.
It hasn't affected that.
What you just said that was interesting to me because, there has been the program that got purged by the USDA, the small farmer operation, it was intentionally targeted to underserved constituency groups, women, minorities, and it was kind of assumed that that was the reason it was targeted was because
set the record straight. Women's resource centers are still healthy. Okay. Nothing changed there. What was the other one you mentioned? I'm sorry.
Minorities.
Minorities. There was a change. You wouldn't get special programming or special treatment if you're a minority. And it was frustrating for myself as someone that just came from manufacturing in Ankeny, where it should be based on the quality of the product and the price of the product.
Mm. Okay. So Trump's popularity is not going to be a problem.
Well, we're, like I said, we're a nonpartisan.
Right.
I haven't seen it. In fact, yeah. I've seen our loan volume go up.
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
Kind of as an aside. Yes. Are you a Tucker Carlson fan?
No.
If I'd asked you that 2 weeks ago, what would you have said?
I don't do. I don't really listen to that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I try to listen to things that are more positive. You know, when I'm traveling.
Yeah.
But no, I don't. No, I don't. I don't. I don't get involved in that stuff. I heard the controversy of whatever it is, but no.
So you're really not involved in politics anymore. You're involved in policy.
Yes, correct.
You don't have to run for office. You don't have to raise any money.
That's thank you, God. Yeah, I don't. I like I said, I don't miss it. I miss the people. I don't miss the grind. Everywhere
so
I go.
You thank your opponent for beating you last
I month. Did.
Yeah, really?
I did. I ran into Matt Blake, and I put my hand on his shoulder and said, thank you for beating me. I miss the people, but I don't miss the grind.
Right, yeah. Okay, well. Hey, Brad, good having you on the program.
Yes.
Folks, we've been talking with Brad Zahn, the regional director of the Great Plains region of the Small Business Administration. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And if people want to contact you about some of the loan programs, what do they do?
Yeah, I answer all my own emails. I could give you the email if it's helpful.
Sure.
It's Bradley. I know my mom only called me that,
Bradley.
It's bradley.zaun@sba.gov.
Very formal, Bradley.
My mom only called me that. When I got that email address, I wasn't real happy. So,
hey, Brad, thanks for joining us. Hey, folks, I got to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about it'll be a conversation that Brad and I would probably disagree on, but he's not going to be my guest the next program. We're going to be talking about Stephen Miller and some of the other folks in the White House that are being kind of called villains by those who are critical of the Trump administration. Quite a change of pace, won't you say?
I would say it's quite a change. Yes.
All right. Back in a minute, folks. Ed Fallon with you here on the Fallon Forum.
Thanks to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon with you here, folks. Hey, thanks to our local small business partners, including Gateway Marketing Cafe, Western Optometry, and Story County Veterinary Clinic. Hey, with me on the program now, Mark Clipsham, a local architect here in Des Moines and a perennial deep thinker. Mark, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Stephen Miller and our great concern that he is kind of the man behind the curtain, the guy that's really pushing Trump hard to, you know, go all out on authoritarian government. And you thought, well, don't be so hard on Stephen. He's got plenty of help. Those aren't your exact words. Actually, those probably aren't even close to your words. But I know you think that there are other people in the administration who are just as, that bear watching just as much as Stephen Miller.
It's kind of like a shadow government. And It's the surface is touched. It's like we acknowledge that the 2025 project is part of the Trump administration and its policy. It seems to me more like Trump is a part of the Project 2025 policy.
Now, a little background there. Project 2025 was the brainchild of the Heritage Foundation. They put this together leading up to the 2024 election, and it got some press, and a lot of that press was not favorable because some of the stuff that Project 2025 wants to do is pretty draconian. And so Trump said, no, I'm not really, that's not my playbook. That's not my guidepost for if I win.
Like we were expecting him to say, oh yeah, I'm totally on board. This is going to direct everything I do. Yeah. I'm never going to hear him say that.
But now that's what he's doing. I mean, it's very...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Dovetail alignment, just parallel. Funny, I was reading through the newspaper headlines today, and they were talking about the new opening of the Center for Intellectual Freedom at U of I.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Well, it's Orwellian speak for...
Yeah.
For
watch what you say.
Intellectual freedom. Yeah. It's the way they name everything, it seems like. I was going to tell, I don't know if I told you this. I watched The Yellow Submarine a couple days ago.
Okay.
Beatles.
Right.
And the people that are trying to destroy them, they're called the Blue Meanies. And I was like, wow, this is interesting. It's like, oh, there's a flower. Let's squash it. The answer to everything is no. You know, and we want to control everything, and we want desolation and unhappy poor people. I was like, for lack of a better observation, that seems to be the goal. It's kind of like going back to the feudal days of, they call it the Dark Ages. I'm going to call it the White Age.
So basically, Mark, the wine house is the Yellow Submarine, and the Blue Meanies are
No, I
stealing.
got that backwards.
Oh, okay.
The
Anyway,
Blue Meanies are the Heritage Foundation. It's
okay,
pretty
yeah.
much,
Yeah,
we
but I
want
mean,
to subjugate you. It's like we want to take all the joy out of your life. I
well,
don't know what
but I mean,
drives people.
the point is the Project 2025 creators are deeply embedded in the Trump administration, despite
Yes.
Trump saying back in 2024 that he didn't know much about Project 2025. He wasn't using that as his playbook, and now it is happening. And it's not just Stephen Miller, it's Russell Vought, for example.
Yes. Oh, Pam Bondi. There's a whole long list of people.
Pam.
It takes a little Google search. It's like who in the Trump administration is involved in 2025, and there's like minimum eight people.
Well, Pam Bondi's gone now.
Well, yeah, not really. No. They fail upward is what it is. So one of my sayings in life is, I hear what they say, I see what they do, or I hear the professed intent, I see the observable result. And the observable result is people are worse off. They're not happy with what's going on. They're having a very hard time making ends meet. Like I said, it's like the feudal system. You want people that are subjugated, and then you've got the overlords.
Yeah. So just a reminder as to where Project 2025, I mean it's comprehensive. It's a big what how many I can't remember how many pages. It's
900
huge.
pages.
900, and it breaks it's broken down into various segments, including the economy and social issues, agriculture, foreign policy. And the foreign policy stuff to me is in particularly very, very frightening. I mean
Education, education.
yeah, sure,
Well,
you can,
and
but
religion too. And one of the points I wanted to make is they say these things, like I said, it's very Orwellian. It's a corrupted version of it. Supposedly, this is, I'm going to say, vaguely Christian driven, and it's intolerant, and it's vindictive, and it's punitive. And I like, this sounds to me like the Old Testament, not the New Testament, which seems to be the source of a lot of confusion in our society.
well, and you're talking to I'm an Old Testament fan, parts of it, but
I
the
was going to say.
the problem is it's a very I think corrupted interpretation of Christianity
Yes.
is now manifesting itself in this kind of this white Christian nationalism. And I mean Pete Hegseth, who I'm not sure he was involved with Project 2025, but
Yeah.
he
Oh, he's a
was.
Zionist. Zionist,
Yeah, I
absolutely.
mean, yeah, he's clearly, I mean, he's calling on God to slay our enemies. He's being rebuked by the Pope, by other people who want to see peace and diplomacy and not war. And yet, his approach is consistent with Project 2025. So
Well,
maybe we're a little over a year and for a few months into the Trump administration. Maybe it'd be good to sit down and do a. And I'm surprised somebody in the media hasn't done this, and analyze Project 2025's goals prior to the election and see how well Trump is doing at meeting those. He's certainly not doing a good job of meeting all of his campaign promises. I
he's
mean,
done the deportation thing, but on the other hand, Obama and Biden did it and did it better with a whole lot less money and quote unquote nicer too. You didn't hear about it. There wasn't the big theatrics and all that. I'm going to go back to the Old Testament, New Testament thing.
all right.
I've read the Bible. I read an annotated version. It was excellent. Literally over 2 years, 5, 10 pages a night. The Old Testament was about intolerance. They
No,
would pick
not
oh,
entirely.
hold
No.
on. Just, no,
Okay.
we're going to go to Babylon or whatever city it was, and we are literally going to slaughter every man, woman, and child there, and pig, dog, goat, and destroy all the villages, and then we're going to take the land. Okay. Oh, rinse and repeat. Okay. And then the New Testament was tolerance, inclusion, No, I completely. I'm watching it.
But I mean, just in fairness to the Old Testament, also known as the Hebrew Bible, you're missing a bunch of really good stuff. The
I'm
prophetic
not arguing
literature, the
that, but
Psalms, the
that's not the part we're
Proverbs.
having a problem with.
Okay, but don't leave
Okay,
that. But
if I could, to me, the essence of the entire Bible, the message was become wise and remain humble. Okay, I am not seeing either one out of this administration. They are arrogant and cruel, and the Old Testament, for example, would say the good steward of his animals was kind to them, and the bad care of the animals were evil and mean to them. I was like, there you go, and they're pulling funding for people with AIDS in other countries and food, and it's like it's peanuts relative to our budget. Well, Trump wanted to bump our military up to 1.5
1.5
trillion.
trillion. Yeah.
That's like, what could
But
you
I
do
mean,
with that money? You could make everybody happy, and there wouldn't be any more wars anymore, and we
yeah.
wouldn't need the Pentagon, which, by the way, hasn't been audited in what, ever?
So we're starting to see some pushback against the Trump administration, and certainly not my first guest. but yeah, he wasn't here to talk politics, even though he's got a long background in politics, and I get that. But the I mean, Tucker Carlson bailing out on Trump, being embarrassed to have been such a supporter, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and just rank and file voters that we hear from saying this is not what I voted for. So at what point are they going to say, okay, Project 2025, not popular with most of America, now being implemented by the Trump administration? At what point is there going to be a enough momentum to say, okay, this is going to stop. We're not going to continue down this road.
Once again, it's stealth. And it's a shadow government. It is not in Trump's message, but it's in his policy. It's buried in the policies. When you curtail all the funding, what in Iowa, they had a farm to table thing, and the farmers had already bought all the seed, and they were growing their plants, and they were going to provide fresh food to the schools and the nursing homes and all, and it was just a pittance of money. And it's just like, there's a flower, kill it. It's like, and then what does Trump come and the Kim Reynolds is like, oh, look, we're starting this new SNAP benefit thing with that. It's like, well, you just killed it. Your buddy killed it. It's like, what, it's already
We've talked about
happening.
that several times on the show, but
Well, and then
so
they make it
let
theirs. It's
me ask
like,
you this.
no.
The shadow government, the shadow government handpicked pretty much by the Heritage Foundation, that is calling the shots for Donald Trump. Are they going to survive the midterm election? What do you
The
think?
relationship was rather conspicuous, don't you think? I don't know anything about this, but half the people on my calendar, they're people. Mr. Trump is impulsive, and they have no shame. They are going to try. I mean, look, they're already redistricting. They're trying to stop mail-in voting, even though he did it. Like,
Right.
the hypocrisy is just galling. They're doing everything they can to undo democracy, which, by the way, is a Heritage Foundation thing. They basically want a king with incredible amounts of power and all the chains taken out like he doesn't already, although he's getting pushback from the courts. They are going to, they're always talking about, corrupted elections and stolen elections. It's like, and of course, the saying, every accusation is an admission. That is the plan. And there is no doubt in my mind something is going to happen. And if I was doing those bets on that thing where they bet on things to
So,
happen,
right, the prediction market. So
slam,
something is going
slam
to
dunk.
happen. Something is going to happen. I mean, right now, if the election was held according to the accepted current standards, Democrats would
Oh,
probably regain Congress.
blue
Yeah,
wave.
probably, possibly regain the Senate. Who knows? But you think they're going to try to do find ways of preventing it from being a fair election?
I'm going to go a little bit off because, of course, you know who I am. Ed, we really need a third party. Right now, we've got the Dems arguing with the Republicans in a boat going over a waterfall, a cliff.
Yeah, I don't disagree that kind of a multi-party parliamentary type system would be a lot better than what we've got now.
There's no checks, and it's like different shades of the same garbage. I'd like. it's all kind of extreme and it's contentious because it's bilateral. If
But
you put in a
back
third
to my
one,
final question. Do you agree that the shadow government, the Heritage Fund appointed Blumenies and the Trump administration are going to try to do everything they can to make sure this election does not go fairly?
yes, they already have there. I mean, they're already in motion, so it will get it more extreme as it becomes more obvious what the logical conclusion is.
Is it going to involve military force?
I mean, they've basically invaded other states. So
And then withdrawn, but
you come up with an excuse. Whatever the excuse, they will come up with an excuse. Yes, to do something. Don't they have ICE agents behind TSA, and they want to have them at polling places to, this is the Orwellian, to protect the elections and their integrity. It's like,
Well, we'll be talking more about this. It's a really important moment in our history. So, Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
I could say something. You know what? Germany survived Nazism. So we have a strong foundation of constitution, and
Right.
when push comes to shove, people get integrity. They go like, whoa, this
Right.
is not the world I want to live in.
And
Not Germany.
Ireland survived 700 years of British imperialism. So, hey, there's
There you
hope. Keep
go.
hope alive. Mark, thanks for joining us, folks. Mark Klipsham with us today. We'll be back in a minute with more conversation. We're going to focus on climate-related issues in the final segment or the third segment of this program. Back in a minute with you on the Fallon Forum.
Catholic Peace Ministry is an independent nonprofit guided by an ecumenical board representing many faith traditions. Founded in 1980, Catholic Peace Ministry focuses on nuclear disarmament and ending the wars between Israel and Hamas and Russia and Ukraine. CPM's overarching concern is the need to end the permanent war economy, which must be challenged if we are to achieve lasting peace and justice. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com.
At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrom's primary concern. Dr. Westrom and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village. Hey folks, welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon with you here. Thanks again to our sponsors and our nonprofit partners, including Circle of Peacemakers and Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility. All right, we're going to talk climate change, folks. A couple of angles, actually three angles I want to look at this from today. First of all, what's going on in the U.S. Congress? It's discouraging. I mean, I don't know how else to say it, but good article in the Guardian about how the Republican Congress are doing their best to make sure that big oil doesn't have to lose another lawsuit. And I mean, they've been sued a lot and for a lot of good reasons. And the effort in the Republican House is being led by Harriet Hageman. She's from Wyoming. And as everybody knows, this guy, Ted Cruz, U.S. Senator from Texas, is leading the charge in the U.S. Senate. And both of the bills they're proposing would give oil and gas companies, you know, pretty broad immunity from any, not just lawsuits, but also against policies that are attempting to hold the industry accountable for the kinds of, you know, harm that's being caused by climate emissions by their product. Cruz's bill, it goes even further, actually. It tries to discredit climate studies, you know, so kind of the basis for a lot of these lawsuits, right? So scientific analysis that quantifies how much, you know, climate change has already, you know, affected people's livelihood, affected the environment, affected our weather. Those would no longer be allowed to be used as a basis for a legal action against a fossil fuel company. And some of the language being thrown about is pretty interesting. The proposal is designed to stop a surge of climate accountability measures launched by states and municipalities, which Hageman's office called, quote, leftist legal crusades punishing lawful activity. So, yeah, there are more than 70 state and local governments that have sued oil companies for, basically deceiving the public about the dangers of their products. And I was involved with this years ago, too, with the movement to expose the fact that ExxonMobil knew that its own scientists came up with conclusive evidence that its product was causing climate change. Instead of saying to the public, oh, wait a minute, look at this, we should be honest about this, they lied about it. This is documentable, easily documented. And even still, even under current law, it's been hard to hold these companies accountable given what they know. But, you pass this bill, I don't know, who knows how that's going to affect it, but it's not going to be favorable. All right, so the second thing I want to talk about, the connection between war, specifically the war in Iran, and clean energy. We all know about the connection between the war and oil, because all you hear about every day in the mainstream media is hand-wringing about the Strait of Hormuz being closed, about gas prices going high. And those, yeah, that's definitely a concern, but it should be a launching point for a broader conversation about where we get our energy supply from. So there are economies around the world, in Europe and other places as well, that are trying to use this moment of high gas costs, of high oil costs, to shift more and more of their energy structure to renewables. But of course, here in the U.S., Donald Trump is doing everything he can to kill off investments in renewable energy, even stopping wind projects that are already, 70% completed? And continuing to deny the science. So again, a good story in The Guardian about this one as well. Democrats have pointed to this as further evidence of the U.S. president's broken promises to lower the cost of living for Americans. And again, good that that's being called out because, he said, day one will bring prices down? Well, if you want to bring prices down when it comes to fuel, energy, expand into renewables. Do more for energy conservation. Do more for energy efficiency. Those more than anything. To me, that's the key. The more you can build structures that are efficient, energy efficient, the more you can find ways of conserving using less energy, that minimizes your investment across the board, including in renewables. But again, renewables now are less expensive than fossil fuels. And yet, Trump is doubling down on drilling. And so, he's not going to be able to fulfill his promise, which is already, a year and 4 months overdue, of lowering prices. But why aren't the media talking more about this? Why aren't they making that connection? The Iran war is not just about high oil costs. It's about how a big-time shift to other sources of energy, it's time for that. It's past time for that. But this is a really powerful incentive to do that. So again, there are countries that are taking this stuff seriously and countries that I hadn't even thought of, but electric car sales are going off the charts in South Korea and in Malaysia, okay? They're ahead of us when it comes to dealing with the energy crisis that's been exacerbated by the Iran war. And meanwhile, in Pakistan, electric rickshaws have been selling out. They can't make them fast enough. And I have some experience with that myself. When I was I went to India back in 1995 to study what current Indian, Indian followers of Gandhi's philosophy were doing to address social, environmental, and political problems. And I was just blown away by the air quality in some of the bigger cities. It was just terrible. And a lot of it was because people were, at that time, switching from bicycle-drawn rickshaws, and I get why that's really hard to do, to haul a couple, people around in a rickshaw on a bike, that's tough. But they were shifting from bicycle-drawn rickshaws to diesel-powered rickshaws. And the air quality was suffering tremendously because of it. I mean, tens of thousands of these diesel powered rickshaws were suddenly adding horrible quality, horrible emissions to the air. So now they're shifting, at least in Pakistan. I don't know about India, but Pakistan, they're switching to electric rickshaws. Again, freeing them up from the dependence on oil and improving their air quality. And the Indonesian president, he was recently quoted as saying, "This is a wake-up call. We will convert all motorcycles into electric motorcycles. All cars, all trucks, all tractors must also be electric." So in terms of climate news, folks, this is a good news, bad news segment. the more good news, in Europe, the European Union is planning to accelerate clean energy deployment, again, to address the high electricity bills. I hate to say this, it's embarrassing to be an American sometimes lately. You know, to see what our country is doing. First of all, to even start the Iran war, there was no need for that action, no need for military action. And now to basically have exacerbated the problem of people paying high energy bills, and then to further the problem by, instead of using the opportunity to broaden the energy infrastructure to more renewables, no, doubling down on fossil fuel production. So Simon Steele, he's the UN's climate chief, he said, quote, "Wars don't disrupt the supply of sunlight or solar power, and wind power does not depend on vulnerable shipping straits." End quote. That is a great quote. I may have to put that on my email. I'm going to read it again. It's so good. "Wars don't disrupt the supply of sunlight for solar power, and wind power does not depend on vulnerable shipping straits." Nailed it. As The Guardian concludes in this article, the mounting toll of the climate crisis is the primary reason to ditch coal, oil, and gas. You know, such impacts are increasingly apparent in the U.S. as well as the rest of the world, with the U.S. enduring its hottest and driest start to a year in recorded history. That's this year, folks. With record-breaking March heat and punishing bouts of drought, heat, and wildfire strafing much of the U.S. West. So yeah, good article on why it makes sense economically to switch, but a good reminder that the biggest issue is the fact that climate change is already wreaking havoc on our country and around the world. Final thing I want to talk about relevant to climate change is data centers. There are plenty of places in the country where data centers are really, really taking off and are causing all kinds of problems. And Iowa is one of the handful of states most prominently impacted. So a good article in the Iowa Capital Dispatch about the visit to our state here by U.S. Energy Secretary Chris Wright. This is last week. He came to specifically support data centers. He wants to see them built. Everywhere in the U.S., it says they're critical to our, quote, reindustrialization. One of the few things I agreed with Trump on in his first campaign was his opposition to NAFTA. And I do like the idea of having more jobs in the U.S., but to paint this just as a jobs issue, well, I mean, and Wright does go beyond that, but, and he made these comments in Cedar Rapids, where there's a lot of controversy. That's Iowa's second largest city. And there's a bunch of controversy right now about a data center being built there. According to Wright, Trump's agenda is we're going to lean in. We're not going to go slow. We're not going to nudge us toward manufacturing again. We're going to do whatever it takes. Okay, whatever it takes, I guess, also means cramming a data center down the throats of people who don't want it, and they don't want it for a whole range of reasons. The incredible energy usage. I mean, these things are energy hogs like no other. The water usage. So, and again, Wright and other proponents of data centers say, well, you know, right now we figured out a way to do a closed loop water system. You know, so I've heard things about concerns about these closed loop water systems. But to get additional information, I went to our friend AI and I asked AI for their take on closed loop water systems. And AI said, while they are more water efficient than open systems, they face significant challenges, including high chemical contamination in, quote, blowdown discharge, whatever that is, mineral buildup, corrosion, and high upfront costs. While they reduce evaporation by up to 70%, they still require quote, makeup water, and contaminants like glycol that can contaminate local water systems if not managed. I hope people continue to push back against these data centers for a bunch of reasons. Energy, water, land use, and the biggest concern I have overall is the existential threat that AI threatens us with. Hey, I got to take a short break. When we come back, speaking of AI, Kathy and I are going to talk about robot farm dogs.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our nonprofit partners, including Bold Iowa, Climate March, and Birds and Bees Urban Farm. Ed Fallon with you here, and Kathy Burns joining me to talk about farm robots. Kathy, what is this about? Robot dogs.
Robot dogs.
Robot dogs. Robo dog.
I guess. I guess they're in the news.
Okay.
And I saw this in a news source called The Fence Post. It's from last month. And we all know farm dogs are a thing. When I lived in farm country, there was always a dog or two on site, and we didn't do farm work, but people do rely on the dogs for herding sheep and all kinds of things, just security, basically.
Yeah, although if one got out and chased your neighbor's sheep, it would be dispatched of.
That would be their right.
Right.
That would be the neighbor's right.
So it's not just Christy Noem who's doing in dogs.
Well, there are probably many other uses of these robot farm dogs, but the one highlighted in the story is operated by Bayer.
The chemical company.
The chemical company.
That bought Monsanto.
And it the story focused on their 7 crop growing facilities in Hawaii. Those facilities total more than 8,000 acres.
Wow,
and they
that's
are
huge.
The source of 90% of the company's internationally sold feed corn seed. So obviously they want to protect it as well as they can. And
protect
now
it from what?
There are wildfires that need to be detected early.
And then a dog robot would put out the fire?
Well, I'll talk a little bit more about how where the people work comes into this.
Oh, okay.
But the hazards cited by the story are wildfires. Wild boars.
Wild boars lighting wildfires.
And vandals.
Human vandals.
Human vandals. So
has that been a problem?
It seems so. And, you know, with people going in and maybe stealing crop or destroying crop to make a statement. Maybe Hawaii is not really happy as a whole with the Bayer company and for different reasons. Back a decade ago, Bayer, was found needing to pay reparations to a good number of people for chemical miscontrol and labor contracts being broken, et cetera. So the benefit for Bayer is that they can hire fewer people as security. The security people now sit in long rows with big screens in front of them, and they monitor what these robots are seeing day and night.
So these robo dogs have already been deployed?
They're in the fields.
Really?
And they look like dogs. For some reason, well, let's talk about the company that creates them. It's called Acelon. And Robotic Security Operations Center is the Hawaii-based security company. And the drone dogs, as they're called.
Drone dogs.
They're made to look like dogs. And it makes me laugh.
I saw they do. They have legs.
They have four legs.
They have a snout.
They
have a little tail, don't they?
I didn't notice the tail. But they can kind of look their heads up and down, the head part, which is a camera.
Do they roll over?
And they can sit. They can kind of crouch down.
Did they shake?
And I think it's funny that they made them to look and behave like dogs, because how cute is that?
So how long before they armed them with lethal weapons?
Well, I don't know if they plan to do this for any vandals in the field.
Blow a few wild boars.
One of the other reasons that Bear cited is that they're saving money on labor, which is hard to get enough of these days, and we all kind of know why farm labor is tough to get these days, but also that if they need to have video footage of an event where they need to provide evidence in, let's say, a lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're charging somebody with a crime on their property. Well, now they have the video evidence right there through these, what are they called? Robo-dogs? What are they called?
Drone dogs.
Drone dogs.
Yeah.
Drone dogs.
Oh, I like robo-dog better myself. Yeah. So, I putting people out of work, that's great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder what the next step here is.
Well, as far as putting people out of work, they also preface that with saying, in order to free up our human labor force for more serious or creative and or responsible endeavors, we have these dog drones out in the field doing the work that humans don't really want to do.
I think it's really interesting that they did design. They could look like a human. They could look like a box. They could look like R2-D2.
They could have looked like anything.
Yeah.
But they made them look like dogs.
So we go, oh, isn't that cute? Yeah. Robo dog. Oh, come. Let me scratch your head. I mean, it's just. Oh gosh. I mean, I don't see where this AI madness ends. I'm not sure anybody foresees all the potential negative outcomes. I mean, I guess you could also equip a robo dog with a fire hose, right?
Maybe they are. I missed that if they were. I don't think they carry enough water. It would be more squirt guns.
Anyway, folks, I'm glad you tuned into today's AI-free pretty much program. Just the one quote that I read. It was the only thing from AI. Kathy Burns and I with you here. Thanks to our guests today, Brad Zahn and Mark Klipsham, and to our production team of Sherry Hardina, Forrest Detterman, Charles Goldman, and us, Kathy and Ed. Thanks again to our local small business partners, Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Western Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, and real estate agent Joe Henry. Thanks to our nonprofit partners and to the Des Moines Iver Session for our bumper music. Back next week with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio. Watch that dog. Watch that dog. That dog is mad. That dog gonna bite you. Watch that dog. Watch that.